because it's been a barrier when we've closed that door on so many people. So there are obviously issues with that test, kind of like what Shonda was talking about, is recognizing how do we prepare students for their career, for their life, rather than thinking that college is the end of it or the ultimate goal. Because we've also seen, sadly, people leaving college and still not using their degrees or not feeling ready or not feeling equipped. And so I think, again, that's a national conversation everybody's having now of recognizing, yeah, maybe we didn't think of it before, but do we need this? Maybe we don't need this barrier anymore. Maybe we can keep that barrier down. So again, I do think looking ahead past COVID, those conversations, people are going to be more open to continuing than if we didn't have this pandemic to reset and recenter ourselves and really kind of rehumanize us into how we learn and grow and engage.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us and having this interview with us and joining us on KBOO. And thanks to Jamie Partridge, who helps us with our sound file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And we are talking with Victoria Rusk, who wrote the Handbook for Mitigation. Victoria, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So Victoria, you wrote a new book about mitigation and the role that mitigation can play in in criminal justice reform. Let's start with a conversation about what is mitigation?
Okay, great question. I get that a lot. What is mitigation? Just because it's a relatively new career path in criminal defense. The ABA guidelines for mitigation were written in 2003. So fairly new idea or field of work when you think of how old is the profession of a lawyer or how old is the profession of a teacher, right? So mitigation for a criminal case is to mitigate the sentence, to mitigate the person, to assist in helping a lawyer tell the mitigating evidence about a person. We really can't mitigate a crime, but you can mitigate a person. And it's kind of the idea of separating the sin from the sinner, if you will. That's kind of a good example, I guess. And mitigation is a type of investigation where you are investigating the why, the real why behind an alleged crime. And that means that you're getting to know the person who is accused of a crime in such the way that you're knowing them to be able to present mitigating evidence that a decision maker like a juror or a judge would consider a possibility in their framework of when they're deciding how to punish this person, if they are convicted, which a lot of times they are convicted, and then how do we sentence them? So mitigation is really getting into knowing the person, not just the most horrible day of their life, you know?
So mitigation could be classified as a restorative justice helps to address some of the core issues. Regardless of whether the defendant is guilty or innocent, it sounds like mitigation is a useful strategy because it begins to address like core issues like traumas, past abuse, issues related to poverty, education, lack of education. We all know play a key role in the development of any person and definitely have a role in what leads people into the, you know, prison pipeline. So thank you so much. And my understanding of mitigation is mostly based on my work with death penalty activists. But I know you have a different take on it in your book, the Handbook for Mitigation, which can you tell me again, what is the complete title of your book?
Oh, sure. It's The Handbook for Mitigation, A Practical Guide for the Community Around a Criminal Case.
Thank you. And it's a really easy to read book. It's not too thick. It's a good book, I guess, for judges, for criminal prosecutors, for criminal defendants, and for, you know, friends and family of people who are facing the trial process. How can people get your book if they're interested in finding out about it?
Heartofjustice.org. I will hopefully get it on Amazon sometime in the future, but right now you can get a downloadable copy, a PDF, from my website.
So let's talk some more about mitigation as a restorative justice tool. And right. I know you mentioned you're hoping to get mitigation into spaces beyond just death penalty cases, because you see it as a really practical tool for all criminal justice cases. Could you talk about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's my campaign right now. Since I'm not able to work, I mean, my work from Corona has been cut immensely. So right now I'm doing my own personal campaign for mitigation for all cases, all criminal cases. And I wrote this book really for somebody accused of a crime or someone who loves somebody accused of a crime so that they can understand it. I know professionals will buy it and thank you in advance, but this is really for someone like, you know, my mama or your neighbor or, you know, somebody that just is kind of really, you know, feeling helpless and they don't know what to do or what they could do. So mitigation in non-capital cases is there because we all have a story. And we're all living in a certain amount of stress, if you will, whether you're living in the crisis of poverty or maybe you are living with PTSD, a behavioral disorder, or a mental illness, or you love someone who is. And let's not forget that some people could be a juror someday. And my hope is that they at least know what that word is and know that this person accused of a crime or that's going through this trial deserves to have their story told and be heard so that that person can properly punish them. Because let's face it, if you're charged with a crime and you get all the way through indictment, it's 90% likely that you are going to be punished in some form or fashion. People are not just walking out of jails these days or out of courtrooms free, scot-free. Doesn't really happen very often. So how do we prepare this person and the people who love this person to really be that community that they need to help the attorney do what's right? Because attorneys are only as good as the tools that they got, the information that they got, the supporting evidence that they got, the records that they have, and then their knowledge of the law, of course.
How did you become interested in mitigation?
Oh man. So I got into mitigation. I wish I had some like serious, you know, heartfelt story, but I needed a job and I got laid off in 2008 and I had a lawyer friend say, hey, you know, I think you would be good at this because you're a good writer and you're really good with meeting people, you know, with just hanging out. And I have done humanitarian work and volunteer work. So he just thought, Victoria, you could be good at this. So he didn't get me the job, but he definitely got me the interview and got my foot in the door. And I started mitigation as a mitigation specialist in 2011, started my business really 2013. And then I just was kind of, you know, first you're just working, you know, on cases. Most of my cases back then were capital murder cases. So very heinous charges, and understanding this person and just kind of really putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And as a journalist, my background's in journalism. I worked for television stations 6-7 years in my young adult life. And I really know how to organize information for the ear. And so people listening, they hear it in a different way than maybe that they're reading it, right? So first I, you know, created a program called Mitigation University to introduce people to mitigation that wanted to get in this business. And I was a business owner, and as a business owner out in the field doing work and meeting people, you know, it was hard for them to trust me because they were like, what the heck is mitigation? And who are you? Are you a cop? You know, you white lady in my neighborhood, you're looking real suspicious, and I'm just not really comfortable. And then you wanted to ask me about that? No, you know what I'm saying? Like, they just weren't having it. And so I'm like, wow, we have a lot of barriers to overcome as mitigation specialists. And then on top of that, people just don't even know what our job is. So it kind of became a little internal mission for me to educate every court and every case that I'm on about mitigation. And there's other mitigation specialists like me who are trying to do the same thing with every court appointment we have, or attorney that we get in front of, or seminar that we go to make our business and our life a little bit easier, just out there working.
Yeah, thank you so much. My experience in interviewing and knowing personally folks who do mitigation is that they have a really big heart, and they're usually really good listeners, and they're also good at getting people to divulge and share information that will really make a difference in a criminal defendant's case. They understand how to hear things that sometimes the person that they're talking to doesn't even realize will be helpful.
Right.
And I know that mitigation can make a big difference. I mean, especially in death penalty cases, and to give people a much more humane sense of who is sitting before them. Now, you mentioned, you know, in our discussion before this interview, that you're interested in getting this out beyond just death penalty cases and cases that like really require a lot of time. How would that work? Like, how could you use mitigation in a felony case? And I mean, what are some of the costs involved? Because doesn't mitigation get really expensive?
Mitigation is very expensive. You're right. And so I think a lot of courts, you know, kind of shy away from it, or maybe won't approve funding unless it's a sex case, or it's, you know, just something that the attorney is really feeling lost about, let's say. So, you know, it's almost like mitigation right now is used in desperation. And I would say that training up attorneys, you know, helping to mold their filter, you know, their brains to seeing mitigation is one way that we can do it. You know, pushing my book out there and giving it to actual people those who can't afford an attorney, I think is really important, because they can take this book to their attorney and be like, hey, I'm going to give you an extra $2,500. I'm going to give you an extra $1,000. And this book is telling me right here that if you don't prepare for punishment, you could be found ineffective. Is that right? Well, my boy done robbed 6 banks or whatever, you know, I don't know what they would say. But I mean, I just feel like getting this information for the regular consumer to understand is going to put that level of awareness out there that regular people will be talking about it. And I think that kind of will be a part of people coming in from the back door in, and then the front door in, is just getting more professionals out there and getting judges to understand that justice for the defendant is understanding who that defendant is, knowing their education background, military background, criminal background, health, you know, makeup, who are they as a patient? You know, what, how does stress, you know, wreak havoc on the brain? What happens when a person is in isolation? A lot of these like mitigating factors that can come together that would honestly make another person who's on the outside looking in more solution oriented. You know, mitigation can form a trauma-informed court, which I feel is like ultimately what we're going towards in the long run, to where we are, you know, sentencing people and or understanding crime in such the way that everyone involved is trauma-informed, is poverty-informed, is doing anti-racism work. We're all just trying to get on the same page here in 2020. Eventually, we will be on the same page, and mitigation will be such a lovely tool that right now, I think all of us mitigation specialists are working really hard to open those doors and make sure we're defining exactly what it is and what it is not. And I think making it affordable is having those like myself who are considered mitigation experts to do trainings and or to just help attorneys on the job train, on the job learning, right? Of what they can do for themselves and market as a mitigation hour on your invoice. You know what I'm saying? And I think that the more we practice it, the more we, you know, get on a radio show like this or talk to local attorney, you know, bar association chapters, it will, they'll see that it's really a part of the formula of winning. And so I feel like, you know, so say we do a mitigation for a felony, you asked about that, and say the family can afford $1,000 or say the family can only afford $500. I mean, a service like that, what I offer in my business, I have a private business, Heart of Justice, but what I offer is let's get character letters written. Let's enroll the people who are the community of this case, the family members, the friends, the old teachers, the neighbors, the coworkers, let's enroll them into what they could do for the person that they love and care for. And us as the professionals, we have to know what those things are that they can do. And writing a reference letter or a character letter is just the beginning of really kind of finding out what somebody might say on the stand or what somebody might say in an affidavit or something like that. And building those relationships, we're always looking for their strengths and how they would come across to a jury or a judge or what they have to say that can contribute to how this person got where they're at and why they are the way that they are.
You're listening to an interview with, we're talking with Victoria Rusk tonight. Victoria is an author. She's written a book called The Handbook for Mitigation. And Victoria is also a mitigation specialist. This is Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Mitigation is a strategy. It's a tool that's used by the courts to hopefully reduce a criminal defendant's sentence and also provide a character profile of a criminal defendant in a case that is trauma informed. So it's informed by trauma, it's informed by you know, education, it's informed by socioeconomic background. It's also informed by issues related to mental health and to you know, other mitigating factors. So it's a way of a picture of the person who's sitting before you, if you're a juror, if you're a judge, if you're a prosecutor. And also for loved ones, it's a way of having a better and more complete understanding of someone who's facing a criminal trial. Your book again, Victoria, your book, A Handbook for Mitigation, is intended for the general public, but it must really be especially useful for trial trial folks, like trial lawyers and criminal defendants. Who would you like to get your book to first? Like, who's the most important, and what could they do with your book?
You know, I feel like this book is a tool for attorneys and judges. You know, the judges, they're supposed to kind of watch the attorney, or they build relationship with the attorneys. And then the attorneys, they're building the relationship with the people in the community, right? And I know in my state, in Texas in particular, we elect judges. So I think, you know, what would be ideal for the professional community is that a lawyer gets into contact with me and asks me how he can buy it or she can buy it in bulk, right? If an attorney were to buy 10 books and they gave them to their client, they're starting on a foundation level. And especially those cases that have some really bad facts. And the attorney, if the attorney is feeling helpless, how do you think the client and their family is feeling? You know, so I want to be able to offer this as a resource for lawyers so they can start building rapport with their clients from the very first day, the very first week. Information can make us feel connected. That level of communication can help us to feel connected and provided for. So I encourage lawyers to be able to give these to the cases that need them the most, and even just say, hey, we read this and then give it back or whatever. But I feel like, you know, when people come to us for help and we give them a resource or information, it builds trust.
Thank you. Can you give an example of how mitigation is used in the criminal justice process? Could you give an example of a mitigation that you've worked on maybe sure. in your career?
Sure, I sure can. You know, the book, I put a lot of living examples. You know, all the names are fictitious and details of the story are altered, you know, for privacy. But there's one case in particular that I can talk about that I share in the book about Alberto was arrested and charged with capital murder. And it was in a drive-by shooting. Now, he didn't actually pull the trigger himself. He was just the driver. And all the same, you know, the prosecutor was still seeking the death penalty in that case in particular. And he came from a very large family, and they were all, you know, really on board. I would say this family was shocked that their loved one was connected in such the thing, because he had only had like little drug cases before that were not that big of a deal. And he was young too, you know, under 25 years old. So that big community around him was an opportunity that I could see. Now, one obstacle was that I really couldn't communicate with everybody all of the time. And so one person in the family assisted me and was kind of my helper. Most of the people in the family and the community that he grew up in were all Spanish speakers, and I am not a Spanish speaker. So having that one ally to introduce me, it really transferred rapport for one another with us. And thinking about just Alberto as a person in particularly, him having that support where some people were going to the jail to visit him on a regular basis. You know, we were able, in this death penalty case in particular, to get over 30 letters only requesting the DA to not seek the death penalty in his case. That was all the letters were about. And I think to the DA, they saw 30 people, 30 witnesses, 30, you know, voters. And that's something to consider, you know, politically speaking. And I was able to do that in such the way because I had that ally in the family. And those letters, you know, just basically showed that this person has a community around them and they're loved, and he made a mistake. But no matter what, he has these people who are going to be there for him. And ultimately, we didn't have to go to trial because the death penalty was waived, thank God. And what we did have was a punishment hearing. And the punishment hearing ended up where, you know, the negotiation, you know, for the client to testify against the co-defendants. That was some personal choice he had to make. And just being able, I think him having that level of support made him make that choice for himself, which then downgraded straight up. The lawyer was able to utilize that as leverage to downgrade the charge. And the client got a really great outcome. The death penalty was waived, and he was sentenced to 15 years.
Someone who's just a driver, like presenting some of their life circumstances, like what was it that led a person to make this choice in life rather than that choice? And what opportunities did they never even have? I mean, we have a criminal justice system that has been constructed by people who have a lot of privilege and who have the capacity to make judgments about how people will act that they really have no understanding of. I mean, they've never lived their lives. They've never experienced the deprivations that they have. They've never had their traumas. If they did, they would be looking at the criminal justice system from a totally different perspective. So thank you so much for your work. We've been talking today with Victoria Rusk, who is the author of The Handbook for Mitigation. Mitigation is a strategy that is really useful in criminal justice for seeking some kind of like real justice for people rather than the kind of justice that's meted out right now. People would like to find your book. Where can they find it?
They can find it on my website, heartofjustice.org. And there's a digital copy and a a hard book that I can send or put in the mail for them. Also, I have a Facebook page for my Heart of Justice business, and there's videos and information on there to link to the website or to just get in contact with me in particular. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And it would be joyous for me to come back and talk about mitigation or mitigating themes or circumstances. There's a lot of cool topics. So thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Karen James from Prison Pipeline. On December 21st, we'll broadcast your holiday messages to and from your loved ones in prison. Write your holiday message or record your voice using Zoom and email your message to kbooppc@gmail.com. Then tune in to Prison Pipeline on December 21st to hear your holiday messages to your loved one. Again, send those written or recorded messages to kbooppc@gmail.com. And from all of us at Prison Pipeline, stay safe, be well, and all the best during this holiday season.
A prisoner's voice from COVID-19. According to published reports, at least some 400 prisoners in Pennsylvania state prisons have been infected with the coronavirus. Today, we'll hear from one. Sergio Hyland is imprisoned at the state prison in Chester. In early November 2020, he was put in Chester's infirmary and soon tested positive for COVID-19. He writes, "The virus was impacting my oxygen levels, causing them to drop. So I was placed on steroids. However, the steroids were having a negative interaction, and they were making my blood sugar extremely high." Hyland had another problem, for he was already diabetic. Nor did COVID-19 treat him well. He writes, "This virus is rough. I've had nights where I literally thought I would die. Sometimes I wished it would just happen so the pain would end." According to Sergio Hyland, several prisoners have died at the Chester State Prison from COVID-19. And perhaps more shocking, Hyland claims some staff members don't wear masks there. Sergio Hyland provides a prisoner's voice in the time of COVID. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.